The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Here I am again with way too much material to get through in the next 55 minutes or so. I told you at the start of the week this was going to be a big news week for sure, but we'll see how much we can squeeze in. Yesterday, Mr. Horowitz, who came out with his report on Monday, he testified before a Senate committee. And suddenly, the media, they're not that interested in public hearings. We'll look at why that was the case yesterday. I'll just give you a little bit of a heads up. My father has been talking about the media complicity in this conspiracy against the president for some time now. He said last year, I forget which month, it said in one of his articles, so the mainstream media has been complicit in this lawless plot. They continually give credibility to this nonsense. All of these conspiracies headed up by these Obama officials, it's giving credibility because of their allies in the media. So we'll look at that here in just a bit. And also, guess who says William Barr is not fit for office? Well, the answer to that question made our very own Richard Palmer erupt in uproarious laughter. We heard it down the hallway this morning as he read this op-ed at the Washington Post. Someone that you're familiar with, who says Bill Barr is not fit for the Attorney General's office. We'll come to that a little bit later in this segment. To begin with, well, of course, here in the UK, the big news today is the election. And we'll probably get results sometime in the middle of tonight. Just to prepare myself for the news of this evening, I think I watched most of Andrew Neil's hour-long program last night on the BBC. He's one of the BBC's better reporters, or certainly one of its best interviewers. I guess excepting last night, he had the Green Party candidate on. She's campaigning for no petrol or diesel cars on the road by 2030. That's all of the UK. Pretty much getting rid of all the vehicles that you see on the road today. In 10 years, she's going to eliminate gas heating, gas for cooking, and then also her party is going to limit air travel. Just one flight per year. Any additional flights will be heavily taxed. So that's the Green Party. They're hoping to double their seats in today's election, to go from 1 to 2. Mr. Neil had a good time with that in the interview with her. You may have seen headlines yesterday, too. Greta, the teenager, making the Time Magazine's Person of the Year. I guess that activist agenda still has a way to go. But in all seriousness, when you think of the Labour Party, now they're going to get lots of seats today. And some of their views, they're not that far to the left. Or rather, the Green Party's not that far to the left of Labour. And so it is. Those are the two big parties today, Labour and, of course, the Tory Party. And as far as how this is going to turn out, well, it's anybody's guess. I think the Telegraph pointed out here today that 17% of voters say that they still could change their mind. I mean, that's a significant chunk of the electorate. 17% saying, we're not sure which way we're going to go yet. Jeremy Corbyn is out there urging voters to shock the establishment, he says. And Boris Johnson, for his part, as I covered yesterday, he's coming up with just about every kind of promotional video you could imagine. Every day, it seems, there's been a new one this week. But regarding Corbyn and his push The Telegraph says here today, the survey also found that more than one in five voters intending to vote Labour would not like to see Jeremy Corbyn leading a majority government. Now, that was brought out last night on Mr. Neal's program. There's people that typically vote Labour, but they're scared of Corbyn, a Corbyn government. I quoted that one yesterday on the show. Someone that was recorded as saying, you know, I'm in Labour, but I don't want Corbyn to head it up. Telegraph says here, 17% of voters said that they would consider leaving the country if Mr. Corbyn became prime minister. 17%. This is not just the Hollywood celebrities saying, we're leaving, we're going to Canada if a Republican wins. This is 17% of voters saying they'd consider leaving the country should Corbyn win. Talks about how voter turnout is going to be crucial today, as it's a wet, dreary day across England. So we'll see. It says the survey puts the Conservatives on 41% ahead of Labour, who's at 30, or the Labour Party's at 36%. I think Andrew Neil was bringing out last night that Mr. Johnson needs to pick up just 8 seats to get him that majority that he needs to get things moving. Most notably, of course, his plan for Brexit. It says the result would give the prime minister a narrow majority of just 6, although the poll predicts a hung parliament as a plausible outcome. There's another article that says it could be a hung parliament or the Conservatives picking up a large majority. It's just hard to say which way that this will swing. Another piece at the Telegraph, it's an election that is as much about morality and culture as it is about economics. Is it acceptable to ignore referendum results that we don't like? Is patriotism good or bad? Can we really turn a blind eye to Labour's horrific anti-Semitism? Its plan to steal property, deprive parents of their rights to educate their children as they see fit, and genuflect to hard left ideologies that have ended in horror whenever they have been introduced? Well, the Telegraph obviously is hopeful that that Johnson will come out on top, but it's just highlighting here these irreconcilable differences between these two major parties. Deep, deep divisions here in the UK, just like in the United States. Well, anymore, the only common theme that you see with both platforms is big government and big government spending. As this Wall Street Journal article brings out, the fiscal breaks are coming off. Prime Minister Boris Johnson is promising voters £100 billion of investment in infrastructure. And then it goes on to talk about all of the the big promises made by the Labour Party. As I say, not that far removed from the Green Party, from the Greta movement. Yesterday in the Churchill class, I quoted from this speech that Winston Churchill gave in 1933, where he talked about the problem with Britain. This is almost 100 years ago. He said pretty much the problem we run into comes from the brainy people, the intellectuals. Churchill said, our difficulties come from the mood of unwarrantable self-abasement into which we have been cast by a powerful section of our own intellectuals. They come from the acceptance of defeatist doctrines by a large portion of our politicians. But what have they to offer but a vague internationalism, a squalid materialism, and the promise of impossible utopias? That's what we hear so much of. I mean, that's applicable to today more than ever. The promises of impossible utopias. That's what they assure us. If you just give us a little bit more power, if we just get a little bit more of your money, then surely utopia will arrive. Well, as Churchill said, these are impossible utopias that they promise. We'll have much more to say about the UK elections today, of course, on tomorrow's program. Well, yesterday, Michael Horowitz testified before a Senate committee, and his testimony, I mean, the IG report before that, it really is a powerful demonstration of just how much partisans are going to be able to pick and choose and find what little tidbits they want to supposedly prove their narrative. And that's what happened on Monday. You see, just in looking at headlines, and I'll look at a few of them here in just a second, but you see the fake news, you see the lies being told, even in real time. You certainly see no remorse. There's never repentance. You know, there's a lot of things in this 450-page report that expose lies that were told for 2 and 3 years. But no one in the media, no politician, none of them are ever held to account. On Monday, they all focused on the same thing, the low threshold, what the FBI needs to open an investigation. Okay, if someone hears something from someone else, yes, an FBI official can look into it. There's not a really high bar set for starting an investigation. But what about keeping one going, even to the point of a special counsel, even after all of the evidence you've accumulated actually exonerates the campaign or the administration? It's all exculpatory. That's what they turned up. That's what this report revealed. Now, all the headlines Monday, they did say, yeah, there were a few errors. Even Jim Comey, in his op-ed that was ready to go, he had it ready to print just as soon as the IG report came out. And he said, yes, there were some errors, but you're going to have errors whenever there's human beings involved. There's more than errors at play here. We'll look at it in just a second. The other thing that they stressed is that the IG said that there's no political bias. But as he has since noted, and of course, Bill Barr made it especially clear on Tuesday, the IG's responsibility was not to search for and find motives. Nobody's going to, this is an internal investigation where they interview their own, and no one's going to sit down in front of the IG and say, well, yeah, actually, everything I did was politically motivated. I mean, I just hate Donald Trump. Nobody said that. And so every time he's asked to explain it, he says there was no evidence. There was no evidence of political bias. In other words, I didn't get someone to say, yes, I went ahead with it, even though I knew it was bogus. But I went ahead with it because I hate Donald Trump. I wanted to keep him out of office. It was my insurance plan. So look at some of the headlines. This is from Monday, The Washington Post. The new DOJ report refutes Trump's conspiracy theory. That was quite common. It's Donald Trump who has the conspiracy theory. The Post says, but his supporters won't care. They're not going to care. Trump supporters, they're all in. They're Trumpsters. They're not going to listen to the truth. The New York Magazine says Inspector General finds Russia investigation wasn't an FBI witch hunt. There was no witch hunt. There was no conspiracy to take down this president. That's what we learned from the IG report, we were told on Monday, before many of these people probably even had a chance to read page one. NBC, internal justice watchdog finds that Russia probe was justified. It was justified. And it wasn't biased. So, hey, they're just doing their job. NPR, DOJ watchdog on Russia probe. No evidence of bias, but problems with surveillance. There were a few problems, but you can expect that said Jim Comey. Because we're human beings, we're going to make some mistakes. Reuters, mistakes but no political bias in FBI probe of Trump campaign. Bloomberg, Trump probe justified. DOJ watchdog says while citing FBI errors. So they did acknowledge there were a few errors, but this was justified. This was not politically motivated. Time magazine, the one that put Greta on the cover just this week, it says Inspector General finds FBI probe into Trump campaign was justified, but not perfect. I mean, it wasn't perfect. And this is my favorite from The Guardian. DOJ internal watchdog report clears FBI of illegal surveillance of Trump advisor. They're cleared. They're innocent. No wrongdoing. No political bias. Nothing. Case closed. That's what they hope. They wish it would stop here. But even if it did, how condemning is this report that came out on Monday? Well, not very, if you just look at those headlines. But then we come to his testimony on Wednesday, and suddenly the media seemed disinterested. I guess it's old news. MSNBC and CNN, they cut away from the hearing right as it was starting with Lindsey Graham. It's a big difference, you see. If it's a committee headed up by Lindsey Graham and not Adam Schiff, they lose interest. They lose interest in a hurry. What a difference when you consider the circus that they've been giving wall-to-wall coverage of over the last several weeks. Well, there was a lot revealed in the report from Monday, and in some ways, it was even more condemning yesterday with Horowitz's testimony, more condemning of the FBI. We now know it's been verified because of this report on Monday that the Steele dossier was actually crucial to the FBI's decision to seek surveillance or a warrant to surveil Carter Page and the Trump campaign. We know this, and yet if you look at the media coverage over the past 2 years or so, they have been screaming that, well, yes, it was unverified, but look, even we didn't take it that seriously. And I mean, it may have been tacked on to the FISA application, I suppose, but you have to understand it just played a tiny, 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 tiny little part in the overall application process. That's what we've been hearing from the major media. And what did the IG report determine, or what did it find? This is an Obama appointee, as I said the other day. If this is as bad as it really is described in this report, and it's an Obama appointee, what happens when the other report is concluded, the one headed up by Durham? Horowitz says, we determined that the Crossfire Hurricane team's receipt of Steele's election reporting, that's Steele, the author of the dirty dossier, we determined that it played a central and essential role in the FBI's and department's decision to seek the FISA order. In fact, they couldn't have even gotten the warrant without it. That's what we now know for sure. This is why the media lost interest. Because they know most people in America are not going to read through 450 pages. And so when it comes time for Horowitz to reveal in a public testimony what were the key findings of his report, the media switch channels, or they just give you a little inset box with no sound, even as they carry on with their commentary. Very different. As I say, very different to the wall-to-wall coverage given to Schiff in the impeachment hearings. this IG report, it describes how that the lawyer that was responsible for taking this, I think, into the FISA court, it wouldn't even take the material in until after it received Steele's reporting, the dossier. And then that's what tipped the scales in the direction of surveilling an American citizen, Carter Page, a graduate of Annapolis, of the U.S. Navy. Let's go back to April of 2018. This is Jim Comey, the former FBI director, talking about the Steele dossier to Rachel Maddow. Clip one.
Nearly a dozen members of Congress this week said that every official who signed off on those warrant applications, including you, should be prosecuted for doing so, that FISA warrant is a scandal, and that Carter Page was wronged. What do you make of that whole line of criticism?
I don't think it's based in substance or law or a genuine concern for the integrity of the FISA process, which is incredibly rigorous and overseen by independent federal judges.
Just the FISA process. I mean, you can't sneak anything through that. No, they're incredibly rigorous. I mean, it's overseen by federal judges. These are human beings that can make mistakes. Is that right? If human beings are involved, there can be mistakes. Isn't that what Mr. Comey said earlier this week? In 2018, it's as if there is no way. There is no way you could get a warrant in a FISA court because, well, the process is so incredibly rigorous, and we're not gonna base our case on false information. And what do we now know? Well, here again, let's stay in April of 2018. He's on his book tour, and listen to what he says to Brett Baer on Fox News, clip two.
You're right. You called the dossier unverified, salacious. Why did you use that to the FISA court to ask for surveillance for Carter Page? Not only use it, but you led with it. A bulk of that FISA application deals with that dossier. Why?
Yeah, that's not my recollection, Brett. And I don't know that the FISA application has been released. My recollection was it was part of a broader mosaic of facts that were laid before the FISA judge to obtain a FISA warrant.
There was a lot more than the dossier in the FISA application?
My recollection was there was a significant amount of additional material about Page and why there was probable cause to believe he was an agent of a foreign power. And the dossier was part of that, but was not all of it or a critical part of it.
The dossier was not a critical part of the FISA application process. Michael Horowitz says it played a central and essential role. Remember Comey in his op-ed on Monday. He said, following the release of the report, the truth is now out for all to see. You had Don Lemon, Chris Cuomo, all of them on Monday night saying, look, just read it. In fact, they didn't want you to read it. They want you to accept their interpretation of it. Which is what? Well, I gave those headlines at the start. It was justified to start. There was no political bias, and that's all that you need to know. Look at what they were saying. Just a year and a half ago, it was just a tiny, tiny part of it. There was a broad mosaic of facts that was so condemning. We needed this warrant. We needed to be able to surveil Carter Page and the Trump campaign. This is Jim Comey. In December of last year, a year ago, clip three.
I have total confidence that the FISA process was followed and that the entire case was handled in a thoughtful, responsible way by DOJ and the FBI. I think the notion that FISA was abused here is nonsense.
And Mike Horowitz says there was FISA abuse here. The FISA process was certainly not followed. Jim Comey's not alone. You go back through all these statements by Obama's people. These are the people that were in place in top positions in the intel community during that changeover, during that transition. This is Marie Harf in an exchange with Molly Hemingway. I think this is on a Fox program, and it goes back to July of 2017, so 2.5 years ago, clip four.
In fact, this dossier was used by the FBI to secure a FISA warrant against an American citizen. It was also used by Obama officials in intelligence agencies to really get this whole Russia conspiracy going.
That's not true, Molly. I was in the administration. That's absolutely not true. We thought this was a funny, salacious thing. The Russia investigation started because of a bunch of other issues not related.
That's Marie Harf, who worked for John Kerry, as Sam was saying earlier today. You know, she's got to be a little careful there about what she reveals, because what would John Kerry, the Secretary of State, have to do with any of this investigating the Trump campaign? But there's Harf walking a fine line, saying to Molly Hemingway of the Federalist, that's not true. That's not true. We thought the dossier was a funny, salacious thing. We never took it seriously. It wasn't really part of this investigation. And what do we now know? Listen to James Clapper. This is from 2018 as well, clip five.
Even the earlier version of the redacted FISA authorization, to me, it had enough information in it to indicate that the dossier was certainly not used as the primary source.
That's James Clapper, the head of national intelligence at the time for Obama, saying that the dossier was not a primary source in the FISA application process. He said this on Rachel Maddow's show, May of 2018, clip six.
Is there anything in the dossier that has been disproven?
No, some of it hasn't been proven.
That's May of 2018. Nothing in the dossier has been disproven. He just said some of it hasn't quite been proven yet. This is from Horowitz's report. We further determined that the Crossfire Hurricane team was unable to corroborate any of the specific substantive allegations regarding Carter Page contained in Steele's election reporting, which the FBI relied on in the FISA applications. So they couldn't verify anything. In fact, the IG report brings out how that one of the sources of it, when she saw it later in print, thought, well, that's just something we talked about over beers in a bar. I can't even believe, and it was totally hearsay. And I got it from someone, a suggestion from a suggestion from a suggestion. This is the sort of evidence that the FBI relied upon. You go back to when it was all broken, this story, the shenanigans that the Obama people were up to in December of January, in the transition period, December 2016, January 2017, the setup, Jim Comey setting up the president, telling him about the dossier. Then the news media had the hook. James Clapper was the informant, the leaker. And then when CNN, when they got the story, they ran with it. Listen to how serious this is. This is January 10th, 2017 from CNN, clip seven.
Multiple U.S. officials with direct knowledge of the briefings tell CNN that classified documents on Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. election presented last week to President Obama and to President-elect Trump included allegations that Russian operatives claimed to have compromising personal and financial information about Mr. Trump. The allegations were part of a two-page synopsis. These were based on memos compiled by a former British intelligence operative whose past work U.S. intelligence officials consider credible.
They considered him credible, the intel community. This is from January of 2000. Remember, Comey and the guys wanted to get this out there. They want the news. Even then, the news media wouldn't run with it. They had to have the hook. They had to have the fact that it was presented to the president-elect. And then they ran with it. And there's Jim Sciutto, another Obama official who's now in the media. He's there saying that the source here, that would be Christopher Steele, the source is credible. Now, you look at the IG report from Monday, and Horowitz refers to an FBI investigation into Steele's work-related performance. There are things describing him as smart, a person of integrity. If he reported it, he believed it. But Horowitz went on to note that the FBI's own notes about Christopher Steele, he demonstrates lack of self-awareness, exercises poor judgment, something that's underpinned by poor judgment, pursuing people with political risk but no intel value, didn't always exercise great judgment. Sometimes he believes he knows the best. And reporting in good faith, but not clear what he would have done to validate. These are the sorts of things that they left out. Talks about all the mistakes in appendix, Appendix 1 of Horowitz's report. 51 of them. Omissions. Changing things. Lying. That's all brought out in the IG report, and yet you look at the coverage CNN gave to this. I mean, this was a very, very serious story. And then that report from 2017, Sciutto talks about all of the principal players involved, names that you're well familiar with, clip 8.
The classified briefings last week, I should note, were presented by four of the senior-most U.S. intelligence chiefs, that is, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, FBI Director James Comey, the CIA Director John Brennan, and NSA Director Admiral Mike Rogers.
Clapper, Comey, Brennan, those were all of the individuals involved in that fraud of an intelligence review from December 9th to January 5th in that transition period. And then the setup, the meeting with Obama on the 5th, and then Comey and Trump on the 6th. Comey assuring the president-elect, you're not under investigation, don't worry about it, everything's fine, but you need to know about this this dossier. You need to know what's being reported, or what's about to be reported. One final clip from, this is from January, keep in mind, January of 2017, clip 9.
The synopsis was considered so sensitive, it was not included in the classified report about Russian hacking that was more broadly distributed in Washington, but rather in an annex that was only shared at the most senior levels of government, that is, the current president, President Obama, the president-elect, Mr. Trump, and those eight congressional leaders, Jake. So just to highlight the point there, you now have the intelligence community
right
in possession of these documents and at least taking a look at them. You have the FBI, as Evan has reported, taking a look at them, and those senior congressional leaders. They have not established the veracity, but they are taking a look.
They didn't know the veracity, but they were taking a look. Now it's out in the open. CNN's reporting upon it. BuzzFeed, remember, printed the entirety of the dossier. Remember the first line of the dossier? Russian regime has been cultivating, supporting, and assisting Trump for at least 5 years. That's line number one. So now the intel community, they're taking a look into it, and that started, supposedly, according to the IG report, it started right then when it became public. January of 2017. Here's what the Federalist had to say the other day. The identity of Steele's primary subsource has not been disclosed to the public. Steele never even disclosed the identity of his primary subsource to the FBI. The FBI identified him or her by January 2017, however, and arranged a meeting. It says, in the meeting, the primary subsource told the FBI that he/she had not seen Steele's reports until they became public that month. January of 2017. And then he/she made statements indicating that Steele misstated or exaggerated the primary subsource's statements in multiple sections of the reporting. This is according to the IG report on Monday. They're interviewing this subsource for Steele in January of 2017. It says here, in March of 2017, the primary subsource was questioned again by a Washington field office agent and repeated the same conclusion that Steele was exaggerating hearsay as conclusive. So the point of it is, they knew They knew. This is from the IG report. The primary subsource was questioned again by the FBI beginning in 2017 about election reporting and his/her communications with Steele, the Washington field office agent who concluded that interview and others after it, told the OIG, told the inspector general that the primary subsource felt that the tenor of Steele's report was far more conclusive than was justified. In other words, it's bogus. It's just hearsay. There's nothing to it. They knew. Comey was still in office at that point. He wasn't fired until May of 2017. But there he is with Brett Baer in May of 2018, after the firing, after he's out on book tour, a full year and a half after the FBI started to investigate these sources for Steele. And a full year and a half later, what was Comey telling Brett Baer? Oh, we didn't really rely on it in the FISA application. There was so much other evidence. Just played a small part. Jim Clapper. Clapper was saying, well, there hasn't been anything disproven about the report. That's what he said in 2018. All these lies are being exposed by the report that was released on Monday. No wonder the media tuned it out yesterday, because they knew what was coming. They know what's in the report. But they also understand how important it is to maintain their false narrative. So they pick and choose, like the partisans they are. And, well, you see what the headlines were earlier this week. I mentioned yesterday how that the other revelation, one other big one from the IG report on Monday, is that it confirms the truth of the Nunes memo from January or February of last year. Adam Schiff, on the other hand, he came out with his rebuttal. And here's a few statements from Schiff's memo. Nunes has been proven true, even though he was attacked viciously for releasing that memo in early 2018. In Schiff's memo, his response, his rebuttal, Schiff says the FBI, quote, provided additional information obtained through multiple independent sources that corroborated Steele's reporting. The FBI, remember, found out it was bogus straight away. January 2017, then again in March of 2017. Here's Schiff in February, March of 2018 saying, look, we've proven that Steele was telling the truth. It's so much worse than just not being corroborated. He's saying they had information to prove it true. That was Adam Schiff a year and a half ago. Here's another statement from his memo. DOJ repeatedly informed the court about Steele's background, credibility, and potential bias. That's a lie. If the IG report on Monday is giving us the truth, if the truth is now out, then it exposes that statement from the Schiff memo as a lie. One other statement, he said DOJ explained the FBI's reasonable basis for finding Steele credible. They want it so bad for him to be a credible source. Jim Sciutto in that CNN report, he was telling us, yeah, the intel community, he's a credible source. The IG report from earlier this week, no, not credible at all. In fact, he was fired by the FBI. My father, as I said there at the top of the show, you look at some of his articles over the past 2 years about the media and how they've been complicit in this lawless plot. This is from Saving America from the Radical Left, May of 2018. This is when all those statements were being made by Clapper and Comey and Marie Harf and everyone on Fox, on MSNBC, on CNN. My father says the entire Trump-Russia investigation is based on a hoax. Robert Mueller's team has been searching for evidence of collusion for nearly a year and has found nothing. But what has been revealed is a tremendous amount of lawbreaking by bureaucrats in intelligence and law enforcement. He says further on, Something diabolical was going on until Mr. Trump was elected, and it's still going on behind the scenes during his presidency. And the media aided and abetted the whole process. They're still doing it. They're doing it in real time this week. This is from August 2019, just a few months ago. It says the media are supposed to help expose and constrain such abuses of power, but the mainstream media was fully complicit in this treasonous plot. Those agencies could never have pulled off what they did without the mainstream media's fervent support. That's what they get every day. Fervent support. Adam Schiff comes on, and I mean, it's wall-to-wall coverage. Lindsey Graham shows up. Let's turn it off. Okay, we'll put it in a lower box so that we can sort of make it seem like we're interested or that we're covering it. But we'll talk right over it. No one will hear, and nobody read the report. So we can just tell them. Look, it started in the beginning because it needed to start. And then there was no political bias all the way through. No evidence of it, said Horowitz. But we'll learn a lot more with the next report. And I think if you listen to what the Attorney General is saying, you don't get the impression that he's just wanting to go back and forth verbally with Comey or whoever else. You get the distinct impression that he's got the goods and he's just waiting to gather all of the facts. But 3 years, as I said, three years ago, the big December 9th, New York Times, Washington Post, Russia tried to help Trump win. And then Obama that same day ordering this full review of Russian election hacking. And then 3 years on from that, finally, we're beginning to get the truth. No thanks to the major media, but we're beginning to get the truth. John Solomon, he's the one that the major media has been attacking as well for what he's written about Ukraine and so on. He said this about the so-called mistakes, the human errors on the FISA process. He says, to understand just how shoddy the FBI's work was in securing a FISA warrant targeting the Trump campaign, you only need to read an obscure attachment to Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report. It's all just in Appendix 1, right at the end of the report. If you can't read the report, read the first appendix. It says, the appendix identifies a total of 51 Woods procedure violations from the FISA application. A whopping 9 of those violations fell into the category called supporting document shows that the factual assertion is inaccurate. That's a nice way of saying they lied. 9 times they lied to the FISA court. He says, and the appendix shows the FBI made another 9 factual assertions that did not match the supporting evidence in file. In other words, the Bureau was misleading on 9 other occasions. The vast majority of remaining Woods violations, 33 in total, involved failing to provide any evidence in the Woods procedure backing up assertion in the FISA warrant application. And he talks about how serious that is as well. Lots and lots of mistakes. And I'm sure we'll learn more if it was, in fact, politically motivated. It's no wonder that you're seeing some commentary this as this week has unfolded and Bill Barr has made some of his opinions and views known. He is coming under attack. Eric Holder is the one who says he's not fit to be Attorney General. Eric Holder, Obama's wingman, as he said on a radio interview halfway through the Obama presidency. This is clip 11.
Well, I'm happy. I'm still enjoying what I'm doing. There's still work to be done. I'm still a president's wingman, so I'm there with my boy.
Yeah.
And so, we'll see. Yeah.
He's there with his boy as the president's wingman. This is someone who was censured by the House of Representatives who lied about the failed gun walking scheme in Mexico, who spied on Associated Press reporters. This was the AG who waded into the Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown cases before the facts were even known. Obama himself did that. This was the AG who blamed Obama's unpopularity on racist white people. He was one who called America a nation of cowards. And he steps forward yesterday, or I guess late last night when it was posted, to say that William Barr is unfit to be Attorney General. He's reluctant to do this. He's reluctant to say this, but he has to, because Bill Barr is so nakedly partisan. What he's doing is so obviously partisan. He needs to be booted. And he refers to not just what he said this week, but the speech he gave at the Federalist Society. We've covered some of that on this program. And what he said more recently about law enforcement, that if communities don't give that support and respect, they might find themselves without the police protection they need. How dare he say that? I guess Mr. Barr should be out there like Holder and Obama were, attacking the police, attacking law enforcement, saying there needed to be some kind of federal oversight to run those local law enforcement agencies the right way, to make sure there was no racism. He thinks that Bill Barr should be out of office. That's at the Washington Post. There's one at the Times that's even crazier. This is just by a commentator who says that Donald Trump famously said that he could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and not lose any voters. I don't know about that, but I'm confident that he wouldn't lose Bill Barr. And then the rest of this sick and vicious attack on the Attorney General, I suppose it's not worth going through. But you listen to what the AG said earlier this week, and you can see why he's a mighty big target for these lawless conspirators who are trying to take down a U.S. president. Mr. Barr gave us an overview on Tuesday. The big picture, here's what he said, clip 12.
Well, I think the big picture is this. From day one, remember, they say, okay, we're not going to go to talk to the campaign. We're going to put people in there, wire them up, and have these conversations with people involved in the campaign, because that way we'll get the truth. From the very first day of this investigation, which was July 31st, 2016, all the way to its end in September 2017, there was not one incriminatory bit of evidence to come in. It was all exculpatory. The people that they were taping denied any involvement with Russia, denied the very specific facts that the FBI was relying on. So what happens? The FBI ignores it, presses ahead, withholds that information from the court, withholds critical exculpatory information from the court while it gets an electronic surveillance warrant. It also withholds from the court clear-cut evidence that the dossier that they ultimately relied on to get the FISA warrant was a complete sham. They hid information about the lack of reliability even when they went the first time for the warrant. But in January, after the election, the entire case collapsed when the principal source says, "I never told Steele this stuff," and this was all speculation, and I have zero information to support this stuff. At that point, when their entire case collapsed, what did they do? They kept on investigating the president and the, well into his administration after the case collapsed. But here, to me, is the damning thing. They not only didn't tell the court that what they had been relying on was completely rubbish. They actually started putting in things to bolster the Steele report by saying, well, we talked to the sources and they appeared to be truthful. But they don't inform the court that what they're truthful about is that the dossier is false. So that's hard to explain. And the core statement, in my opinion, by the IG is that these irregularities, these misstatements, these omissions were not satisfactorily explained.
Everything you heard right there is in the IG report. The big news, of course, was that the AG, and I covered this on Tuesday, the AG, John Durham, they posted their, you know, what they disagreed with as far as how it got started and whether or not it was politically motivated. We'll learn more about that as we go. But as far as laying down the facts of what happened, everything you heard him summarize there, you can read about it in the IG report. The case collapsed. It collapsed in January of 2017. Okay, so maybe you met the very lowest of thresholds to go ahead and open an investigation. But as he says in another clip, I'm not sure if it's coming up here or not, why didn't they go? They went and talked to the Russians. They confronted the Russians about meddling in the election. And why didn't they tell the Trump campaign? Why didn't they give them a defensive briefing? Why didn't they say, hey, Papadopoulos overheard this and we just want you to know that one or two of your assistants might be compromised. They didn't do it. They just wanted a spy and they continued even after the case collapsed. They tried to prop it up and they went and lied to the FISA court to keep it going. And worse than that, it triggered a special counsel, which was then another investigation. And Mueller knew from the outset there was no evidence of Russian collusion. So he spent all of those months and millions of dollars and hundreds of interviews and subpoenas and thousands of this and that. And of course, the 19 left-wing investigators. Basically to build a case for obstruction of justice. Obstructing justice for a crime that was never committed. And that collapsed in July of this year. And then they move on to Ukraine. And then they hurry through impeachment. And then they try to draw attention to impeachment, even at this time, at this moment. Because they knew the report was going to be condemning. Report comes out. They've got the narrative already established. Every single one of those headlines I gave you at the start, they're all the same. They just move a word here or there, but they're all the same. Few mistakes, but boy, it sure does expose Trump's conspiracy theory. They still can't get over the fact that William Barr would say that putting a wire on someone and then having them go talk to Trump or whoever else undercover, recording the conversation or tapping into phones and emails without someone's knowledge, a U.S. citizen, they still can't get over the fact that he would actually call that spying. Listen to this exchange from Tuesday, clip 13.
Based on what you know so far, do you still stand by your statement that the campaign was spied upon?
Well, it's clearly spied upon. I mean, that's what electronic surveillance is. I think wiring people up to go in and talk to people and make recordings of their conversations is spying. I think going through people's emails, which they did as a result of the FISA warrant, they went through everything, you know, from Page's life.
Because he wasn't in the campaign at the point where he began the surveillance.
Yes, but his emails were go back. I mean, the main reason they were going for the FISA warrant initially was to go back historically and seize all his emails and texts and all that stuff from back months and even years. So they were covering the period that he was in the campaign, and that's exactly the reason they went for the FISA, to get that stuff.
Another argument collapses. Well, but Page was out of the campaign by then. How could you say he's spying on the campaign? Because they went back. They went back months. They went back years. But he's a partisan, Bill Barr. Listen to him answer that charge. Move ahead to clip 17.
I think a lot of people will hear what you're saying here and think, well, that's just Bill Barr defending Trump. Your concern about the FBI's investigation is what? Civil libertarian?
I think our nation was turned on its head for 3 years. I think based on a completely bogus narrative that was largely fanned and hyped by an irresponsible press. And I think that there were gross abuses of FISA and inexplicable behavior that is intolerable in the FBI. And the Attorney General's primary responsibility is to protect against the abuse of the law enforcement and intelligence apparatus and make sure that it doesn't play an improper role in our political life. That's my responsibility, and I'm going to carry it out.
And a lot of people are going to try to stop him from doing his job. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.